everyone, and welcome back to Then Again, the podcast of the Northeast Georgia History Center. I am Marie Bartlett, and I am the director of the Ada May Ivester Education Center here. Today, I have with me author Jenny Bond to speak about her many books, most of which are set in the historical fiction genre. And we will be speaking about the research that goes into writing a historical fiction book. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hello. Thank you, Marie.
So you have written many historical fiction novels and series, including the Maggie Allman series, the Dawnland Chronicles, A Day in May, and The Ice Balloon, all of which sound amazing. So I would love to know, how did you become a writer? How did you start off with this goal of writing these books?
Wow. It was actually, I'm an English high school teacher and a history teacher as well. And that's what I've done since I graduated university way back when. And my husband is a journalist, and I've always hassled him about writing a novel. And I said, when are you going to write your novel? You've got a novel in you, I'm sure of it. Anyway, he turned around to me one day and said, look, why don't you write a novel? Stop nagging me. You write it. So I thought, oh, okay. So I did. And after about a year, my first novel, The Ice Balloon, was the result. And then I just, it was like I'd been stung by something, and I was hooked, and I couldn't stop writing. And it's now probably my favorite thing in the world to do. And I had no, although I've read a lot of books because I'm an English teacher and I just love reading anyway, and analyzed a lot of books, writing came quite naturally to me. So while the first novel, The Ice Balloon, was a little rough around the edges and did take a lot of editing when a publisher wanted it, it did take quite a bit of editing. It was still, there was still enough in it. It was still a great story for someone to want it, which was great. And subsequently, every time I write something, throughout the editing process, I learn more, and I've just become a stronger writer through that. So I've never really done any formal courses or degrees in writing. It's just something that's come quite naturally to me, especially the way a book is structured. It doesn't have to be chronological. It can go back and forth. And so, yeah, that's how I wrote my first novel. And before that, I hadn't really written anything before, nothing. Not a poem, not a short story. Hadn't even tried to write a novel. It wasn't something that was in my realm of possibility. But yeah, my husband said those words. I was like, oh, okay, I'll give it a go. Yeah.
Kind of like Margaret Mitchell, who we just talked about, is, you know, her husband says,
exactly, that's right, yeah,
why don't you write a novel? Like,
yeah. And I think I just needed someone to think, to believe that I could do it. So, and I thought, oh yeah, I'll try. And I, yeah, it was, and that was historical fiction, just because I think of my interest in history. I love the research process, and and that was my first novel, and it's just been great since then.
Yeah, so you said The Ice Balloon was your first novel.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the history behind it and what inspired you to write it?
Right, yeah. I read an article in the New Yorker magazine some time ago, and it was about a Swedish explorer called S.S. Andre. And he tried to discover, this is the late 1800s, he tried to discover the North Pole in a hot air balloon. So him and two other scientists took off from Sweden, and their plan was to then go in the hot air balloon and land at the North Pole. It all went terribly wrong. They ended up dying, and I'm not giving anything away here because in the novel they die right at the beginning. but then they found one of the explorers, whose name was Nils Strindberg. They actually, when they found the bodies, they found his diaries and a series of letters he'd written to a young woman back in Sweden who was his fiancée. And they're now in a museum in Sweden. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Like, that's pretty amazing to find the diary, find the letters. And it was quite a few years later. So their hot air balloon, they perished in 1896. and the diaries were found in the 1930s. So they'd been preserved, in the ice. I just thought, wow. And then I started thinking about the young woman who never received these letters or saw the diary. And I thought, so I started thinking about a story about the people that these three explorers left behind, and that was the ice balloon. And I thought that the fact that somebody wanted to discover the North Pole in a hot air balloon, and I'd never heard of it. It's quite a well-known story in Sweden, but I thought, wow, that's just nuts. So I really got into that as well. So that's how that novel came about.
Because you think it's a simple idea, like we'll just fly there.
I know.
But then you start thinking about the logistics of a hot air balloon and the North Pole.
Exactly.
And somehow I guess they just didn't click.
Yeah, and hot air balloons were relatively new at the time, and I was thinking, how did you, like, this guy Andre was quite fanatical, and I think from the research I did, I think by the end they all knew that they were doomed, but they went along with it anyway because there'd been so much build up, which makes it even more tragic. No, I just thought that's a fantastic story that I had never heard, part of history that apart from people living in Sweden, nobody knows about it. I thought, wow, what an incredible tale.
Yes, I never heard about it. And with some of those doomed expeditions, a lot of times we don't hear about them unless they're local or have a larger part of a story.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's right.
That's incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
What makes you drawn to write historical fiction in particular?
I guess it's my interest in history anyway. And my favorite genre to read is historical fiction. And it always has been since I was a little girl. Even watching TV or movies, if it's historical fiction, you know, I don't care what it is, I'm going to watch it. And I also like the research process. I really enjoy discovering about people in different times, and if there were time machines available, I would be in one in a second. I would much rather live in the past than in the present. My husband always makes fun of me because I don't watch any news. I never watch any news. I'm just not really interested in it, or I'm doing something else, and I don't know what's going on in the world or what's going on in Australia. But I know everything about, you know, what was happening in Sweden in that late 1800s. So, you know, it's just what interests me, how other people lived back then.
Because there's so many similarities to our lives, the loves, the losses, just the human condition. But the settings, even though it's our same world, still feels so different.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. And it's just you it's any story, you're just placing in a different time. And then what I love doing is researching that, not only that time, but, you know, the technology they would have used, the transport, the fashions, the etiquette, everything that comes with that time to make the story as authentic as possible.
Yes, because I have definitely read some historical fiction, and as a historian, I'm just like, oh, they didn't do their research.
Yeah.
Someone cut some corners here.
Yeah, I know. And it's really, like, it's really important. And I'm sure a lot of writers don't do that much research. And then other writers, there's an Australian author called Karen Brooks, who I love. She writes historical fiction, all set in sort of 1400s. And her books are fantastic. And what I love about them is that they're so well researched, from the language, for how they spoke in those days, to what they were wearing, what they were eating. It is so meticulous. I think it does make the novel much more gripping, to really feel that you're in that time with the characters.
Yes, because when I read a historical fiction novel, I want to be transported. I want that novel to be my time machine.
Exactly. That's right. That's a really great way to put it. And the only way I think an author can do that is to do the research.
So can you take us through, we talked about your research and what inspired you for the ice balloon.
Yeah.
But maybe for one of your series, could you take us through what was the research process like for you?
Okay. So we'll take the Dawnland Chronicles series. So the first book in that is The Hummingbird and the Sea. And that came out of an idea. I was actually in the States, and my son at the time was quite young. He was about 10, and he wanted to go. There was a pirate exhibition at the National Geographic Museum in Washington, D.C. And it was all about a real life pirate called Captain Sam Bellamy. And they had just, an expedition had just discovered his pirate ship off Cape Cod. Like, it had sunk there in the 1700s. They had discovered it and got all this gold and guns from the wreckage, and that was what was on display. I thought, wow, this pirate was really successful, but I'd never heard of him. So we went through the exhibition, and I thought it was really, really interesting. And so I started researching him, and I thought maybe I could write a book about this Sam Bellamy. And then that just kind of mushroomed, and then it got into more pirates. And then I discovered, and I didn't know this, that pirates were actually, so he was from England, but they did, because they were sailing in the Caribbean, they would often, you know, connect to bases in the mainland USA. I thought, wow. And this particular pirate had a girlfriend in Massachusetts. And I thought, wow, this is, you know, and these were Puritans. So Puritans and pirates coming together. And I thought, what a great story. So that's when I started to really research. So on one side of it, I was researching pirates. The other side, I was researching Puritan life and in the Massachusetts Bay Colony at that time. And that the research for that first book probably took, just the research before I'd even started writing, probably took 12 months. And that was just reading, and highlighting things in books and writing things down. And then after 12 months of research, that's when I started writing. But then as you write, the research doesn't stop. I'm still thinking, oh, okay, I didn't know that. How can I? And then I'd have to do a bit more research. But a lot of people don't like it, and they say to me, how can you just read all those books and do so much research? And I said, well, it's just interesting. It's just really, really interesting. And I'm always learning things I don't know. And that's, I think that's really good. And then, so that was for the first book. And then the research became less for subsequent books because I'd done so much at the beginning. But there is still some research that happens, but not as much as that first book.
That makes sense, because when you have a series, obviously they're all set within the same general time period.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And then but I feel it's really important. Like, I have to know that world so well, and that can only come through research and reading and watching documentaries. And I did a research trip to Salem, Massachusetts, and that area. So it's just basically immersing myself in that world so then I can recreate it for the reader.
Absolutely. That's so cool. And it's to go and to visit the sites specifically, I think, has such power.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
To go walk right
I remember there. When I was researching my second novel, A Day in May, that's all about FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt. And when I was researching, like, I'd actually written it. And then I was going on the research trip, and then I fell pregnant and I couldn't go on the research trip anymore. So I thought, okay, I'll just write the book. And then after the baby's born, then we'll do the research, to go on the research trip. And when I went to Campobello Island, which was where FDR and Eleanor had their kind of summer house, it was just so different to what I had imagined or what I had seen in images. And there was so much I got from that, just being there. I thought, oh, God, yeah, I get it now. I get that this is where he went swimming. And, you know, and the book became better because of that. And I can't even, you know, I can't even imagine not visiting a place before writing about it.
Otherwise, you have like this, you know, you read the books, you look at the photos, you do all the research, and you could come up with like this whole idea, and then you go there and you're like, oh, wait, this room's connected to this room? I didn't know that. Like,
yeah, that's right. Exactly. And there was this scene in the book where everything I'd read, they talked about the beach at camp on Campobello Island. I thought, oh, it'd just be like, you know, in my mind, I thought it'd be like an Australian beach. You know, there'd be a lot of sand and then water. But it wasn't like that at all. It was grass leading out to a jetty, and they call that the beach, but it wasn't a beach as I know it. Yeah.
You just like things where you're like, oh, well, of course, but also no.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, no, I think to visit a place, and also the worst thing in the world would be for someone to read it from that place and say, this isn't what,
this isn't how that works.
This is nothing like that. No.
There was someone, I was reading a book and it was set in the city of Savannah, which is in Georgia where I'm from. And I visited Savannah several times, and I was reading the book and I was like, did this person ever go to Savannah, or did they just read about Savannah?
Yeah.
Because it felt like they had just read about Savannah and had never actually been there.
Yeah.
And I could tell that from reading the book and also having been to Savannah.
Yeah, and looked things up. I remember reading a book that was a crime novel, and it was a Scandinavian crime author, but part of the book was set in Australia and in Sydney. And I was thinking, they were just like, and then they got on the number 59 bus to wherever. And I thought, there's no number 59 bus. What are you talking about? You know?
She's like, that doesn't exist.
I know they're dumb details, but from someone from Sydney, you think, what?
Yeah. Like, you could have just looked up what our bus system looks like, right? Like,
exactly. That's right. Exactly. But they were thinking, oh, Australia. No one knows about Australia.
they might not have done a site visit.
Exactly. I don't think they did.
So what do you think we can learn from the past by reading historical fiction?
What I think is that it's kind of like, for me, reading historical fiction and writing historical fiction is kind of like an anthropological study. I like learning about people and their beliefs and how those beliefs drive certain behaviors and actions. And I think people are basically, throughout the years, people are basically the same. But what influences them, like the outside forces, are really interesting, and what sort of impact that has on their decision making. I know a lot of people say, oh, we have to learn from, we have to go back to history to, you know, improve the present and the future. But that's not really, I don't think that's really happening. I think there's still wars, there's still conflict. Women are still, there's still gender inequality and all that. I think the world hasn't really improved that much. But what I like is that it, and this is what I tell my students as well, the more we read about people and different eras, the more empathy we have for different people in different situations. And I think that's really good. I think what the world needs is empathy. I think we need to be feeling for each other. And I think that is the one great, you know, positive of reading historical fiction. We're really getting into the minds of people, how they're acting, why they're acting in that way. And I think that's so important to have that sort of empathy.
Because historical fiction brings history to life in a way that is immersive for the reader.
Right.
And at our museum, we do living history interpretation, which means like today, our homeschool students got to meet Susan B. Anthony. And it's a historical interpreter, of course, an actress, you know, wearing a historical outfit, talking as if she's Susan B. Anthony with the kids and presenting about her life.
Yep.
But I think to have an actor, to have a person be like, and I am Susan B. Anthony, and I'm going to tell you about myself as part of history, instead of just like reading a textbook about, you know, and this is when she was born, and then this is what she did, and then this is what she did.
Yeah.
It brings a human face and life to it, to where we can try to empathize with historical people and understand that they were just people.
Exactly. Just people like we are. And it's, you know, they weren't that different. It's just everything around them was different.
They wore different clothes. They had different ways of maybe cooking their food and different technologies. But Yeah. At the end of the day, we all wore clothes and ate food.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly. So it's and I think people, I see so much, like, not necessarily cruelty, but I just think there's so many things that could be improved in the world if we were all just a bit more empathetic. And as I'm saying that, less and less people are reading. And I just think, no, no, you've got to keep reading.
Yes. Literacy grades are a little scary sometimes when you look at some of the stats.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little concerning.
Yeah. So scary. And trying to get, as I said, I'm a high school teacher. I teach boys. I'm at a boys' school. And the year seven, which are like 12, 13-year-olds, they just don't read. And trying to get them to read is impossible. Possible. And I noticed that's becoming more prevalent each year. And I think, oh my goodness, why aren't you reading? You know, it's so much more interesting. You get so much out of a book. And they don't want and so hard as a teacher to try to get them to read. Unless I read to them. Then they like the story.
Interesting.
Mm.
I guess we all like hearing a good story.
That's right. That's right. It's nice being read to, I have to admit.
maybe we should look at stats for audiobooks. Maybe people are doing more of that.
Anyway, we'll see.
So you also offer a book consultation service. So what would you say to someone who is aspiring to be a writer, especially of historical fiction?
I would say, number one, research the incident. So I think that all historical fiction has to start from a little seed, whatever that is. It could be like when I've just read the article about the hot air balloon going to the North Pole. It has to start with little seed. Start researching that seed and see if it has legs, if there's anywhere to take the story. I'd also say that just to write, like, do your research and then just write. Don't worry so much about how it's structured or or how good it is, and don't go back and self-edit. Just get it all down on the page, because I think that stops a lot of people. Like, they write a little bit and they think, oh, this isn't making sense. But once the entire story is written, then you can see, you know, then you can make the edits and make the alterations. But so many people stop so early. And I'm like, no, just keep going. Just push through. No matter how terrible you think the story is, just push through, because first drafts are always terrible. Always, always terrible. And yeah, I think that's really important. And then once it is written, have the staying power to go through the editing process, which I think a lot of people will write a first draft and they think, well, that's it, I'm done with this. But it could be 11, 12, 13 drafts before it's good enough to send it to a publisher or to publish it yourself. It has to be, and people just, either if they write it, they'll stop and they, I don't want to see this again. It's taking the year of my life. I don't want to look at this book again. But through the editing process, I love the editing process, because it's so, I learned so much. I love to see the book improve, and I will work on a book myself. I'll probably do 5 or 6 edits. Then I work with an editor, and then she reads it, and she'll come back with changes and suggestions. You know, by the end of the process, when the book is ready to be published, it's not a different book, but it's a much better book. You know, it's really tight. It's really good. And I go back and look at the first draft and I think, wow, that, you know, it took a long time, but we got there. And that's every writer, I think. And people just, I think a lot of people starting out aspiring to be a writer don't realize it's, especially historical fiction, it might be 6 months to a year of research, then it might be 6 months to a year of writing, and then 6 months to a year of editing. It's, you know, it's a process. It's so I think, and I although a lot of people say to me, oh, I think I've got a novel in me, I think, I'm sure you have, but do you have the staying power? You know, do you? It's a marathon. You know, it is a marathon, and you really have to love what I think, you have to love the characters and you have to love the story. And that's what is great about writing a series, is I can stay with those characters who I love so much for a longer time.
That's wonderful. And we will be sure to put the link in the description box to your website where people can go and find all of your books and then also find
your
book consultation service. So if you're interested in any of the books that we discussed today, if you're listening here and, I know I am really interested in, well, all of these, I really did like the cover a lot of A Day in May. I was like, ooh, the White House. How interesting.
The White House. That's a good story. I like a political drama romance. Yeah.
And like FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt are always such an interesting couple. So
that was so interesting. Yeah. So I'm very and very unconventional too.
Yes. So I'm very intrigued by that one. So that one might have to make its way to my bookshelf. But thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing some of your tips and tricks and inspiration. It was so delightful to get to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Have a lovely day.
Then Again is a production of the Northeast Georgia History Center in Gainesville, Georgia. Our podcast is edited by Andrews Gilles. Our digital and on-site programs are made possible by the Ada Mae Iyoster Education Center. Please join us next week for another episode of Then Again.